Chapter 17. The People and Their Princes. When one looks at the 17th chapter of the Tao Te Ching, one immediately realizes that when it uses the word princes, it means the spiritual leaders of humanity at various levels of development. In ancient times, rulers were also religious leaders, or better still, spiritual leaders were also state rulers. A symbolic relic of that can be seen, for instance, in the English royal family, in which the monarch is also the head of the Church of England. At the beginning of a new human epoch, a new day of manifestation, the remnant of fallen humanity is brought back into manifestation. The emptied, purified microcosms are brought out of the cosmic night into a new period of dialectical activity, in which they are again given the opportunity to surround a personality. When such a day of manifestation dawns, spiritual leaders are sent to humankind, whose task is to guide and impel it towards liberation. In these early stages, obviously, it is not possible for such leaders to be drawn from among the human beings manifesting on Earth, because they are not yet sufficiently mature. So in this tender stage of human development, members of the last and lowest link in the chain of preceding brotherhoods emerged from the chain of immortal souls as princes and leaders. Having already attained liberation before the last cosmic night fell, there was a vast distance between these sublime princes and leaders and the young remnant of fallen humanity. Owing to this immense distance, direct contact with them was impossible, and the most that could be achieved was an impersonal link through which humanity's sensory perception and dream life could be influenced. At that stage, human entities were incapable of perceiving their spiritual leaders in person. Nevertheless, all were convinced of their presence because they experienced it inwardly. They experienced the gods. That is why the Tao Te Ching says, in ancient times, the only thing the people knew about their princes was that they existed. The second hierarchy of princes was drawn partly from the people itself under very special conditions, for in the meantime, the racial body of young humankind had developed. Certain predisposed entities could now be overshadowed by the gods of the last link in the chain. Later, some gods were able to manifest themselves in a microcosm in an even more direct way, initially by supplanting a person's consciousness while he was in a temple, and subsequently by birth. In this way, a more direct and personal link between the spiritual princes and humankind became possible. This direct personal connection was also necessary because man's inner vision was becoming increasingly dimmed as a result of his immersion in matter. This explains why the Tao Te Ching says, "Then came princes who were loved and praised by the people." The worship of the first phase was supplemented with the love and praise inspired by actually beholding the princes in person. As the development of dialectical humanity progressed further, a third phase became necessary. The spiritual princes belonging to the last link in the chain could now withdraw, because they had completed the work of laying down the path of magic and giving all the necessary teachings and instructions. At the same time, the human racial body and microcosmic state had matured sufficiently for a hierarchy of spiritual leaders to be recruited from among humankind itself for the first time in the history of the new humanity. Through this new human priesthood, at certain appropriate times, one of the former spiritual princes would return to Earth to sound the reveille and ensure that the proper contact was maintained for as long as possible. This was extremely necessary because the developing human eye centrality soon had a deteriorating effect. The new hierarchy of priestly princes recruited from among humankind itself disintegrated because of quarrels about power and because of envy, jealousy, and the whole range of human passions. And since this hierarchy had been trained in magic, and the racial body was still rather tenuous and not as dense as it is now, it was possible for magic practices to have far-reaching effects. Some displeased rulers' magical incantations could cause immediate death. Good and evil in their extreme forms were considerably intermingled, and thus the people had every reason to fear their princes. Hence the words, "Then came those who were feared by them." Lao Tzu scans the whole of human history extremely swiftly because he is concerned not with the past, but with the present. Hence, the brevity of the sentence he uses to describe the next phase in man's development. The time when rulers were also priests passed by and spiritual standards continued to plummet. This was inevitable because the densification of the racial body and the deterioration of the ruling priesthood naturally led to the breaking of the connection with the princes belonging to the last link in the chain. Seen from the spiritual point of view, there remained only the presence of the Gnostic radiation field and the spiritual schools, which took over the tasks of the decadent priesthood. These spiritual schools had to operate with the utmost caution because they were fiercely persecuted in all kinds of ways. That is why the next phase could only lead, firstly, to a degeneration of the priesthood into black magic practices, and secondly, to the development of theology as purely intellectual knowledge without any inner priestly standing rites or qualities. In this way, contempt came to the man of the masses and ever-growing scorn. Love and adoration vanished, and so did fear. Priests and theologians were no longer taken seriously. Hence the words, "Those who came thereafter were held in contempt by them." The period we live in now is one in which the majority of human beings have completely lost any connection with the Gnosis. As humanity continued to crystallize and degenerate, such connections were betrayed and destroyed. The masses were hemmed in and indoctrinated by a sham spiritual life, which most people nowadays scorn and distrust completely. In theological circles, there is a certain amount of self-knowledge, and people are aware of achieving nothing and being ignorant. But even in their ignorance, many theologians believe themselves to have been called to spiritual leadership. In addition, so much blood has been shed by their forefathers over the centuries, so much evil and cruelty perpetrated that, laden with this heritage as their foundation, like a mark engraved in their blood, they remain bound. Just think of the witch trials of a few hundred years ago, of the countless persecutions of the servants of spiritual schools, like the Brotherhood of the Cathars. Think of Calvin, who instigated the persecution of Michel Servet. Millions have been massacred in our era, and this has resulted in an increasingly powerful blood reaction of mass distrust and hatred. And you know the law, the person who does not trust others will not receive the trust of others. Of course, efforts are being made to develop the ecumenical movement, to form a kind of new spiritual international. But how can anything new in the sense of a restored link with the Gnosis be realized on the basis of ignorance combined with such a damaged condition and such a vast hereditary burden? The present-day priesthoods have long since lost their rights as firstborn. Those rights were transferred to the spiritual schools many thousands of years ago, and they have had an ecumenical movement ever since that time. The theological ecumenical movement, on the other hand, only consists of a succession of congresses and strident publications, whereas it is clear that quite a different path ought to be followed. In this connection, just look at the closing verses of chapter 17. "The ancients were slow and ponderous in their speech. When they had accomplished their tasks and their labors had borne fruit, the people said, 'We live spontaneously.'" Genuine workers in the vineyard of the light are slow and ponderous in their speech. This means that they only speak when it is really necessary and never merely for effect. Their attention is focused on accomplishing their tasks and seeing that their labors bear fruit, so they do not suffer from verbal delirium and see no point in saying anything merely for the sake of appearances or to indulge in conjecture. For every worker and every pupil needs to demonstrate the facts in every aspect of their lives, both inner and outer. Only facts can really speak and testify. Only truth, only reality is liberating. Only through the rebirth of the soul can one transcend the world of time and space. After a great deal of effort, a working apparatus and a basic foundation of inner values have been realized. The ancient wisdom has been divested of its material veils. The connection with the princes of the last link in the chain has been restored, and the sevenfold living body has been made ready. So now we stand before the task of gathering in the harvest from all the corners of the world. The forge has been built, the anvil is in position, the fire has been lit and is being roused to a fierce blaze. So now the hammer blows must fall. A new priestly host must now prove itself. Each member of it must personally demonstrate a new state of being, not with words, but with facts. That is the key which can break open humankind's present blood state. People are drowning in distrust and contempt, born of a nameless woe. Do not come to them only with words. You will never succeed. Do not come to them with the ordinary methods, with pious, honeyed words, but go to them in your new soul state. And when in this way your tasks have been accomplished and your labors have borne fruit, the people who are ennobled to it will say, "We live spontaneously. We are coming to you. We are with you spontaneously because we see the facts. We are coming because we cannot help it. We are inwardly moved to do so." Then they will practice not doing just as you do, and they will attain what you have attained. And that is the path in practice in the living present. That is the prescription for liberation. It is the prescription of the ancients.